Blog Talk Radio.
Here comes the time. Baruch Hashem blesses our Creator. We're alive because we're most happy to be alive, connected to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Racham, instructions of mercies. We now turn to Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly suggest, and maybe we'll even start to assert that we are the higher internet frequency. Blog Talk Radio, we call ourselves Soul Class. This happens to be Soul Class program presentation 661. Choose life, don't get hooked on nicotine. Blessed is our Creator, shalom, and blessings upon the human family experience. With Creator's help, we're now broadcasting live on September 17, 2017, 11:32 a.m., live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unified Soul Actualization. Program content will be concerned with reviewing some informational lecture your local / international cyberspace store actor has done since you've been attended pertaining to nicotine replacement therapy and the foundational knowledge, or better yet, lack of foundational awareness, which can contribute to the insidious slippery slope downward slide of being addicted to smoking, snorting, snuff, or chewing tobacco, which from one perspective is supported, promoted by segments of human culture and rejected by other segments of human culture. As well, we will try to integrate Torah insights, which can provide a potent arsenal of redirecting human behavior towards more sustainable lifestyles. Of course, we will welcome anyone who has beaten their addiction to call and offer their insight, whether it be previously slanted towards nicotine, gambling, drugs, or any other form of self-injurious behavior towards their precious body and soul. Of course, you can just give your initials. You don't even have to give your name. Our call-in number will be 347-838-8669. We hope to do it in the second half of the program if someone can be brave enough to call in. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones. And before we get on with the shoe, we'll have to reduce the volume. In fact, we turn off the song of the wonderful singer, my blessed brother of spirit and prayer and soul, president of Beth Mazal, Isaac Batone, from his seminal work, Here Comes the Time, from his Generation Redemption album. So now we're going to get on with the show. We got to turn to the music. Sorry, Rabbi Isaac. Ooh, and joining us live in the studio is co-host. It's been too long since we've been together, but hopefully this will be the preface, the preparation for the next coming year in the lunar calendar, Hebrew calendar year 5778. Rambam teacher, student teacher Dennis Ryan, who will be giving us his viewpoints, his wisdom of life, and perhaps some experiences when he worked for the New York City Housing Authority. And without further ado, good morning, Dennis.
Shalom aleichem, boker tov, and may the intentions of God be expressed in our program today, Don.
Amen. Well, Dennis, I consider this to be an expression of love I feel towards Creator. And if I feel an expression of Creator, I want to express my appreciation for other human beings. I want to tell you this gathering, which took place at, maybe you're familiar with downtown Brooklyn, it was at 160 Schermerhorn in downtown Brooklyn by the courts, the municipal courts and state court. And the course was delivered by the Center for Urban Community Services. We'll talk a little bit about this wonderful organization. It's a non-for-profit based in New York City. But before that, I want to hearken our blessed so audience, to going back into time, before the time as we know it, in the West, or in the East, or in the North and the South, going back to the Garden of Eden. Because sometimes before we get into the heavier stuff, we have to give some Torah perspectives to empower us with whatever discussion Dennis and I will engage in. And of course, anyone is welcome to call in the second half of today's program. This is from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, from a letter that he had penned in 1959, 5 days before the new Hebrew calendar year at that time. It would have been 5720. And the Rebbe wrote the following. When Adam, original man, was created, the Creator immediately made him known of his powers and explained to him what his purpose in life would be. And what would his purpose in life would be? Well, I suggest, blessed souls, that you turn to Genesis chapter 1, verse 128, where it says, "Replenish the earth and conquer it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." Rather continued, "Therefore a human being was given the power to conquer the whole world and to rule over it on land and sea and in the air. He was joined to do so, so this was his task." Then the Rebbe asked a question. How is this world conquest to be attained, and what is the purpose and true meaning of it? And our sages of Israel tell us the following in regard to this matter. And this is something which is relevant to every human being, because every human being was created with a divine image. Rebbe continued in culling from the sages of Israel. When God created Adam, his soul, his divine image permeated and radiated his whole being, by virtue of which he became the ruler over the entire creation. All the creatures gathered to serve him, crown him as their creator, but Adam, in his humility and also in his greatness, pointed out their error and said, No, my fellow creations, for I too am a creation. Let us come and worship God our Maker. The world conquest, which was given to a human being, he or she, as his or her task and mission in life, is to elevate the whole of nature, including the beasts and animals, to the service of true humanity. Humanity permeated and illuminated by the divine image, by the soul which is veritably a part of God above and coming down with merciful love. So that's my little poetic interjection there, blessed soul, so that the whole of creation will realize that God is our Maker. Needless to say, before a human being sets out to conquer the world, he must conquer himself through the subjugation of the earthly and beastly in his own nature. And this is attained through actions which are strictly in accord with the directives of the Torah, the law of life, the practical guide in everyday living, so that the material becomes permeated and illuminated with the lights of the one Creator, our God. So Creator created us all, but we are a replication with all the variations that have blossomed from the human family experience. That's the beauty of the human family experience. However, the original depiction of humans is that Creator created one man, and on this single person on earth, he imposed the said duty and task. So the Rebbe said there's a very profound yet crystal clear directive, namely that one person, and each and every man or woman, is potentially capable of conquering the world. If a person does not fulfill his or her task, and does not utilize his inestimable, you can't even estimate how many divine powers a human being has, he or she, it is not only a personal loss and failure, but something that affects the destiny of the whole world. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Well, I like how you said Adam got an explanation. Most of us humans don't get explanations. We're born and we have to find out. But in the middle of that epistle that was written there is the words, "Know thyself." In other words, how can you conquer anything else if you don't know yourself? So some of us will spend a lifetime trying to understand ourselves. But that is the goal, because once we can achieve that level of self-understanding, we now can express it to the rest of mankind. And that's why we're the stewards of the earth. But to do that, you have to understand all the responsibilities and the ins and outs. But it starts with one individual, and that's you. So we must put the emphasis that you have a purpose in life, and it begins with knowing thyself.
Thank you, Dennis. And with the rest of the program, I'd like to arouse our listeners and to share with you as well, Dennis, the power of honey, because, blessed souls, you know, an addiction is a very serious matter, and we are not going to be judgmental. And I believe in the course of my humble presentation, it's not about being judgmental. It's about awakening awareness to every human being who has, whether it be a nicotine addiction, whether it be a gambling addiction. And there are people, I have to say, I mean, I know from my experience in this field, there are people with sexual addictions, any type of a gambling addiction, whatever you want to say. So my intent, and I think everyone's going to enjoy this wonderful little teaching from Rabbi Shmuleshes, and then we can get into the meat of the program, talking about how our words want to actualize the spiritual verbal power that we're going to try to access, accessing our divine image, by learning about the power of that substance. Most of us, as long as we can eat, it won't hurt us health-wise. If we have a person with diabetes, they might not be able to use this food. But for those of us who are not diabetic, Baruch Hashem, to learn a lesson in serving Creator and fellowship with other people through the power of honey. And this was something penned by Rabbi Shmuleshes, and I think everyone's going to enjoy this little piece here. Throughout history, honey has been used as an excellent preservative. Objects immersed in honey have preserved for decades and even centuries. In fact, Alexander the Great conquered the Persian city of Susa. He found a large quantity of expensive purple-dyed fabrics, over 200 years old, preserved in excellent condition by an external layer of honey. Now, modern physics has what to say about honey. While appearing to be a liquid, it actually has an extremely low concentration of water coupled with a high concentration of sugars. That's why it tastes so sweet. The result is that the honey draws water from its surroundings by a process known as osmosis. Honey sucks and squeezes the water out of anything placed within it. As a part of this process, it will dry out harmful yeast or bacterial cells that it is exposed to, causing them to die. Now, according to the teachings of Chassidus, which is the inner dimension oral Torah tradition of Israel, honey teaches us a great deal about the characteristics we call kindness or chesed. And there are just basically two general varieties of kindness. One is benevolence, a type of kindness that stems from an innate generosity of spirit and desire to be genuinely kind. The other is altruism, a type of kindness that stems from a moral duty to help others. Benevolence says, quote, I want to be kind, end of quote. Altruism, says, quote, I have to be kind, end of quote. Benevolence is always good for the giver, but not always for the recipient. Benevolence lasts for as long as there is an interest of the giver. As soon as he or she no longer finds it gratifying, the kindness stops. Such kindness tends to be transient from the recipient perspective and does not bring about any real transformation, as it will evaporate at the first sign of real confrontation. With altruism, the reverse is true. Altruism is always kind to the recipient, but sometimes can be hard on the giver. Since altruism is focused on the recipient, it demands a commitment which outlasts the stage where the giver derives any feelings of gratification. Altruism has an enduring effect on the recipient. It has a power to bring about his or her complete transformation. In the language of Chassidus, this type of altruistic kindness is referred to as disciplined kindness, for it is a kindness born of discipline. The honey is an altruistic kindness. Its properties of preservation kindness stems from its own viscosity and extreme dehydration. These qualities are what give it the power of transformation. According to Chassidus, that's why we Jewish people, on the coming lunar calendar New Year, dip foods in honey. It is our way of asking Creator to manifest his altruistic and transformational type of kindness, even though it was limiting for him. So each Rosh Hashanah we consume a lot of honey, but let us not stop there. It behooves us to act like the honey as well, to do that extra deed of goodness and kindness, even when we don't especially feel like it. This is the surest way to usher in a good and sweet new year. Dennis, were these words sweet, or perhaps they could sour on certain people who are not understanding the true power of altruism and the true power of benevolence?
Well, reality sets in here, Don, and that is, we must remember also that honey was used as medicine for many years by humans. Mm-hmm. And we even have a derivative of that called royal gelatin that was used to cleanse our skin and other things. So honey is an intricate part because it's part of nature. And anything that emanates from nature is not really bad. But the idea of kindness, and I like this word kindness, because I believe we sentient human beings all have a relationship. And that relationship, even though we don't know each other, is there. It's inherent, I believe. And that is, mm-hmm. we all have a little bit of kindness in us. It was given to us originally, my belief. And that is, some people use it, some people don't. Some people want to ignore it. Some people don't want to even believe it's there. But from a human viewpoint, if you see something happen to a human that is bad, we have a feeling for that. In other words, let's say an old man falls down on the street and you're walking by. Are you going to help up that old man? Suppose you're across the street. Will you cross the street and help that old man or woman? I mean, we all have grandfathers and grandmothers, so we do know what the representation of age is and what it can do. But how do we react? That is where the kindness is. Would you help someone you don't know? So helping is the action of the kindness that exists. Take the Rambam. He had a pretty nice job. To the Sultan in the Caliphate, and he was like a medical advisor, but he was a very wise man, and they kept him around. But that's what he did during the day. What did he do at night? He had a long travel to go to the suburbs of Cairo, and there he treated all the lower class people or middle class that did not have much money, but they needed medical help. So he did this through the night, and most people would find him the next day sleeping at his desk or a little bed or a chair. Now, here's a man who gave in kindness to those people that he couldn't help during the day. But he thought, why not? So we exhibit this kindness in many different ways. And it's a question of how much do you want to give? When we give money, do we give it blindly? In some cases we do, because we think we're doing a kindness. But if you say a prayer, hoping that God will help somebody who needs the help, that in turn is another kindness. So this kindness, if we all practice it, it would be a beautiful world. Unfortunately, we end up doing it on a selective basis. But on the other side, kindness is also an addiction. There's some people that are always willing to help other people. God bless them. We need them.
Thank you, Dennis. Well, now I just want to just mention again, this was a course that I take because as someone whose agency, I cannot name the name of my agency, unfortunately, because anything I say could be construed as representing the agency on an official basis since we're broadcasting around the world. However, I can say that I did, in fact, And basically from what the information I'm going to share with you, I share with my peers to deal with people in our program. So I'm happy to say, Baruch Hashem, in our program of 62 clients, it's only about 5 people that smoke, which is a pretty low percentage. It's not even 10% of our population. But with that being said, the Center for Urban Community Services is located at 198 East 121st Street, New York, New York, 10035, and their phone number is 212-801-3300. If anyone is listening in the New York City area, 5 boroughs, and you'd like to have them come and give a training, smoke cessation, I heartily recommend it. They also give courses on suicide prevention, recognizing the signs of a person who would like to get involved in a self-injurious act, and various other modalities of treatment for people who have severe mental illness who live in the 5 boroughs. The person who gave over the class is a very nice man. His name was James Kennedy. And James talked about, in fact, both of his parents were chain smokers. In fact, his father, who had developed, I believe it was either heart disease or lung cancer, was actually strapped up to an oxygen machine in the waning days of his life. And in the room was either his mother or a relative, I don't remember this part, but they had a pack of Marlboro. And his father, while lying in his bed, actually lunged at the Marlboro to ask if he could have one more smoke. James was present in the room, said, you know, father or pop or whatever he called his father, listen, if I give you this cigarette, you'll hold on to the oxygen tank because I don't want to be there when the place blows. I mean, the addiction was so strong so that a man was willing to, in his waning moments of his life, he was willing to even, you know, to die literally for a cigarette. And I actually have a work peer whose mother, in the early, I think it was in 1990, she was in treatment in my mother's hospital and was hooked up to an oxygen machine, and someone lit up a cigarette in the room she was being treated. The room blew up and it killed her. So we see that addiction can not only be self-injurious, it can be harmful to other people. We're not even going into the idea of secondhand smoke, which is also pretty, it's very toxic. So, Dennis, the idea that people sometimes they get caught up in an addiction. Before we start to, you know, share the actual material that was presented, the toxicity of an addiction is that it brings a person into a mindset where they become so self-centered, they lose their equilibrium in terms of just trying to stay alive in a safe and sustainable fashion. We'd like to make any comments about that.
Yes, what happens is, all humans are creatures of habit, and we collect habits because we repeat them. When you repeat things, it becomes part of you, and you don't think about it anymore. You just do it. And that's one of our weaknesses as humans. And that's why we have this expression of know thyself, because you must know what are your weak points. If you know where your weak points, you can address them. But if you're doing something like lighting up a cigarette every 10, 15 minutes of the day, you're doing it out of habit. You're not doing it because you're making a choice that you want to repeat this habit. You just keep doing it. All human beings on Earth are habit-forming creatures. Animals do it. They walk down the same path. They eat the same things. They turn when they get to a certain tree, left or right. They don't think about it. These are things that becomes part of living. Just like in the city, some people, when they have to walk a couple of blocks, will walk on one side of the street and not the other. And they may do this several times without saying, oh, I want to walk on this side of the street. Why? Because it became a habit. So it becomes incorporated into our being. And we have to be careful of that, because there's a lot more bad habits probably and good habits. So years ago, I used to ask people who were smoking heavily, I said, how many packs a day do you smoke? And some people would say two or three. I said, do you remember the first cigarette that you had in the morning? They said, oh, yeah, that was great. I said, but when you open the second pack, do you remember what the first cigarette tasted from the second pack? And they would say, no, not really. And then I would say, well, why did you take it out of the pack and light it up if it doesn't give you the same joy as the first one? And they said, you know, I really haven't thought about it. And to me, I said, well, there is. That's human nature of developing a habit that you don't make choices for because you're so used to doing it. So cigarette is only one habit. There are many different types of habits. But the bad thing about cigarette stuff is that you're putting foreign substances into your lungs. Your lungs weren't made to handle foreign substances all the time and mix it with the oxygen that we breathe. So eventually you wear down your organ called a lung, because it can't take that battering of foreign material into it. It's unnatural. We weren't born in a smoky atmosphere. Nobody put a cigarette into our mouths when we were kids. But we develop these habits as we get older. So once again, the theme of know yourself Because if you don't know your habits, then you're exposing your weaknesses to everybody else. Will it affect them like Don said? Yes, it does. Sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly. But if you're stuck with cancer in a hospital because you smoke too much, you're affecting all the people who work in the hospital. You're affecting all your relatives, etc. But to turn it into an American type of concept, let me just say one thing. Years ago, baseball players used to put a little lump of tobacco in their mouth so that they could chew on it. And they thought that was pretty good because when you chew, you create more saliva so you can spit. And spitting was, a standard thing. Not, was it a habit? Some people could say it was. But putting in that little lump of tobacco inside your mouth led to tongue and mouth cancer that a lot of the some of these ball players developed over the years. So if you want to mix your body with foreign objects, and you're going to have to live with the outcome. But these are habits that were formed. But some people said, you look pretty good. You know, you got a lump there, and you look like a tough guy, etc. Tough if you end up in the hospital. That's not the sign of courage, because you didn't take care of yourself and you didn't know yourself.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to talk about three components now, springing off what you just said. Again, what I like about this, Dennis, this presentation is not to rebuke, but rather to educate, as we'll see in the next few moments, that education is one of the best potent means of assisting people end their addiction. In fact, James Mitt said something very interesting. When counseling people with an addiction, the facilitator or the advocate for the cessation, in this particular case, the nicotine addiction, tobacco addiction, whatever you want to call it, it is not the job of the facilitator. As much as they care, it is not their job to do more work than the person who has the addiction. On the contrary, if the person who has the addiction does not put in harder work, whether it be emotionally, physically, behaviorally, than the person trying to collaborate with them, then there's something wrong with that scenario. So what we want to do is we want to share some information that will kind of level the playing field and open up the minds for the hearts of those listening in right now around the world about matters relating to smoking. So in this training, what I learned is that there's a biopsychosocial three-pronged, three-headed monster in terms of why people get addicted to this stuff called nicotine, which is basically what it makes the tobacco seem like an attractive pastime. And unfortunately, people take that pastime into a full-time endeavor and endangering themselves and even others. The risk factors for nicotine use and addiction, and this was compiled by L. Richter in 2015, Understanding and Addressing Nicotine Addiction, working for CASA of Colombia, that's Columbia University. Yes, there can be people born with a genetic predisposition. They were born with inherited addictive genes which increase addiction. And James added, if both parents are smokers, there's a great likelihood that the child will develop a disposition towards smoking. There is a physiological and biological component, and some metabolize nicotine at a faster rate, which unfortunately can increase the addiction intensity and make it even more challenging to quit. The environmental, or the social, community and culture, poverty, environmental stressors impact the likelihood of addiction to nicotine. So if this is such a scourge, why should we, of those of us who will become aware of this, why should we promote smoking cessation? Well, according to the Center for Disease Control, 2016, currently, and that's, I hope there's less, and I hope there's not more, it was cited that as of 2016 by the Center for Disease Control, 42.1 million people in the United States are smoking cigarettes. However, it is the leading cause of preventable death in the U.S., more than 480,000 deaths, or one out of five deaths each year. Because if we can help people break this addiction, we can reduce the amount of people dying in this country. 16 million Americans suffer from disease caused by smoking. But some good news, and we'll be sharing much more good news at the end of this presentation about what are the benefits of quitting. Quitting cuts risks 1 year after quitting. Risk of heart attack drops sharply. Within 2 to 5 years, risk for stroke could fall to the same as a non-smoker. 10 years after quitting, the risk for lung cancer drops by half. So this is where it gets very, very, how shall I say, enlightening, thus it says, to become aware of the following two pieces of information. Again, this information was gathered for the Center for Disease Control in 2016, that there is in fact a correlation of education to who is smoking more and who is smoking less. Those individuals with the minimum of a GED certificate, 34.1% of this population are smoking. With a high school diploma, the rate drops to even almost half. Those who attain a little bit higher than GED certificate with a high school diploma, 19.8% of those individuals are smoking. With some college but no degree, 18.5%. With an associate's degree, 16.6%. And with someone who has earned an undergraduate college degree, 7.4%. With a graduate degree, 3.6%. Now, what James presented in his teaching this past Wednesday is that the tendency of the reduction of smoking and nicotine addiction has some sort of connection towards reducing the smoking or chewing or snorting tobacco with the insidious nicotine within it, because when people become more educated, they make more educated decisions. As well, there's an economic component concerning smoking statistics, again, gathered by the Center for Disease Control, that current cigarette smoking was higher among persons living below poverty level than those living at or above this level. In fact, 26.1% of adults who live below the poverty line are smoking. Adults who live or at above the poverty level, 13.9% are smoking. Now, I just want to mention one more thing before I turn to Dennis for his viewpoints on this, that I learned more than several years ago that unfortunately, there 1 out of 7 people walking around the United States of America are walking around with diagnosed or undiagnosed forms of mental illness. And that includes schizophrenia, personality disorder, bipolar, manic depressive, a whole range of diagnoses. And there are around 300 million people in the country? So that would make it about 45 million individuals in this country. And to amplify that, I saw recently as well, 1 out of 7 billion people in this world right now within the human family experience are walking around with disabilities. But despite all that, okay, the point I want to share with you, blessed souls, and I'll turn to Dennis for feedback, is that education has a very strong means by which we can assist others, assist themselves, and work on themselves to overcome. And one of the things that I've been taught, and I kind of feel I've internalized it, and I try to spread the word, when we talk about someone who has an addiction, when we talk about someone who has a severe mental illness, we talk about someone who's manic depressive, someone who has some sort of spiritual, emotional, cognitive malady, that does not define the whole of that person. It is one component of that person that, for whatever reason, known only to our Father in Heaven, that they are being tested. And ultimately, if they can pass this test according to their abilities, and of course those in their environment who are encouraging them and empowering them and validating their feelings and complimenting them with each baby step they take, that in fact they can serve as not only individuals who have actualized their potential, but serve for as living examples how all of us so-called normal people, whatever that's supposed to mean, can actualize our potential. Because According to Creator's plan, it is not normal not to actualize all our potentialities. And for whatever reason, again, these are the secrets of Creator, individuals with addictions or other tests that say we so-called normal people have, and they don't understand fully, that we can learn from them, and we should embrace the fact that they have courage that we should only be able to draw from that level of courage within ourselves to accomplish what we must accomplish in this world. Dennis?
500, 600 years ago, people thought now, that tobacco was helpful for the digestion based on the smoking concept. But then again, that's when they were smoking pipes that were like, I had a stem that was a foot and a half long. So the stem was acting as a conduit in between there. But the tars and the nicotine that come with burning of tobacco are now known to the point that the tobacco companies actually control the amount of nicotine and tars that was in the cigarettes, per se. So they had a way of increasing your addiction for tars and nicotine that you didn't know what was happening there. But two things are very important here, and that is when you smoke, when you inhale, you increase the temperature of the air in your mouth. That has a significant effect on your spit that's protecting a lot of your mouth, because it breaks down a lot of the stuff that's in the spit, so it's not as working as strong, and that's why it starts attacking the teeth. That's for one. The other thing is, they did a study years ago, and they took a smoker in the middle of the night, and they wired him up for temperature, and they told this person to light up a cigarette and smoke for a minute or two. What they did find out from these studies is that your body temperature drops 10 degrees when you start smoking tobacco.
Wow.
10 degrees. Do you think anything else would control the temperature of your body? And this is not a natural thing, but it's a phenomenon about tobacco and the body. In effect, after all is said and done, there's nothing really positive about smoking to your body. Everything is turning up negative. But if you're not educated, you may not know that. If you never asked or questioned anything because you thought it was, gee, this habit is a relief. Oh, I feel so much relaxed after I smoke. Oh, I feel so much better. And I'm sure some people will say, yeah, some of my sins will go away because I'm so relaxed. Now, that's an exaggeration. But there's nothing positive about it, because you're working against your body. Would you ordinarily do that if you knew the effects? That's the big question mark, and that's why Don is saying education. If you are educated enough, you should be able to make better choices and to know yourself better.
Amen. Thank you, Dennis. Now, you might say, well, what's going on with this cigarette? I mean, it looks like a little stick, you know, a little larger than, say, like a standard firecracker. Well, the American Lung Association in 2016 published the following information, which they've been doing for years, but this is the most latest information that was available for the training I took last week in downtown Brooklyn. So what's in a cigarette? Believe it or not, this little teeny tiny stick, there's roughly 600 ingredients. Now, what is so insidious about those 600 ingredients is that when the cigarette is burned, it creates over 7,000 chemicals, 69 which can cause cancer. And here's five of them that are found. These chemicals are released in going into the mouth, the teeth, the lungs. Acetone, found in nail polish remover. Ammonia, used for household cleaner. Believe it or not, arsenic is released into the body, which is used in rat poison. Butane, used in lighter fluid. Cadmium, battery acid. I hope I'm going to pronounce this next word right. Toluene, used to manufacture paint. I mean, I'll tell you, Blessed, just to know, from these six chemicals that are released from those 600 ingredients, which become 7,000. I mean, it's like a plague. It's a self-induced plague, an onslaught an actual an outright out front like attack on the body. And therefore, that this type of addiction has actually reached, ascended to the level. I'm not saying it was in 2015, but it was cited by L. Richter again in 2015, Understanding and Addressing Nicotine Addiction, published through CASA of Columbia University, that a problematic pattern of tobacco use leads to significant impairment or distress. And when it occurs within the last, if we measure back 12 months, if one meets two of the following symptoms, they can be diagnosed actually with a diagnosis called tobacco use disorder. And there's basically seven criteria. If a person meets two of them, then they have, in fact, tobacco use disorder. Increase of tobacco use over a longer period than intended. That's one. Two, persistent desire, unsuccessful attempts to control use. Three, a great deal of time spent in activities necessary to obtain or use. Four, cravings or strong urge to smoke. Five, recurrent use resulting in failure to fulfill a major role obligation. Six, tolerance and withdrawal. Seven, important activities given up or reduced because of use. And what I once learned, I remember his name was Rabbi Chill. He was a addictions counselor who came into an organization I was working at 16, 17 years ago, and he mentioned one of the signs of an addiction is when the addiction becomes the replacement for more suitable and tangible human relationships. So when a person is not able to pay for their food bills or their gas bills or their electric bills, whatever, because of the addiction, in this case cigarette smoking, which that would take a lot, it can be said of that person, and of course this is in the realm of a psychologist, a psychiatrist to diagnose, but we can just say openly that according to these criteria, we're talking about an individual who has succumbed to tobacco use disorder. As well, from the Center for Disease Control 2016, that tobacco addiction and health is killing more people than HIV, drug use, alcohol use, car injuries, suicides, and murders combined. So we see, Basil, this is not an addiction to be taken lightly. And the paradox is that it's societally approved of. It's a very heavy thing. Society, through the free market system, is allowing someone to, in fact, harm themselves. Now, another component to consider. Two components, then we'll turn to Dennis for more feedback, comments, questions, and concerns. The effects of cigarettes on psychiatric meds. Yes, many people with severe mental illness have turned to cigarettes to, quote-unquote, feel that they feel better. It helps me calm down. I'm more myself. It helps me when I'm feeling lonely. I had a bad day. What else would you rather I start to drink with the medications I'm taking? But the problem is, blessed souls, with the effects of cigarettes on psychiatric medications, the chemicals in the cigarettes can impact the way the body metabolizes psychiatric meds. And an individual who smokes must be monitored closely for medication adjustments when there is a change in smoking intake or status. TARs, which are processed by liver, make medications metabolize quicker, and smokers typically need twice the dosage of medications as non-smokers. Now, I can tell you, as someone in the field, that many clients who've reached a certain level of baseline stability, they like to reduce the amount of medications, which they should be titrated down, of course, under the supervision of a qualified psychiatrist, in certain circumstances, a nurse practitioner, even a medical doctor. So smoking will actually, in some cases, as James cited, and not cited here, a person will take twice of the very medication they would hopefully one day would like to reduce. And again, as it is it can endanger other people regarding the reality, unfortunately, of secondhand smoke. Risk-free secondhand smoke does not exist. Brief exposure can be harmful, and this is cited by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Non-smokers exposed to secondhand smoke increase heart disease and a risk of 25 to 30% more. Secondhand smoke causes 46,000 heart disease deaths per year. Exposure to secondhand smoke causes ear infections, asthma, respiratory symptoms, infections, and greater risk of sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS. Horrifying. And again, 60% and relating to economic status, 60.5% of individuals living below the poverty level in the U.S. were exposed to secondhand smoke. Now, for those who want to say, well, let them go to e-cigarettes, stated by the American Lung Association 2016 and also calling from smokefree.gov 2016, when it comes to e-cigarettes, blessed souls, okay, the virtue of electronic cigarettes are battery-operated products designed to turn nicotine and other chemicals into vapor to inhale. However, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, has not done clinical trials to determine the safety, the chemicals, and quantity of nicotine in e-cigarettes. As well, recent research shows that e-cigarettes expose others to secondhand emissions, including formaldehyde. Now, who wants that stuff going into our body? Dennis, your take on these very serious matters concerning smoking, secondhand smoke, and the supposed panacea of e-cigarettes, which there's no clinical proof that they're a panacea for reducing the risk of cigarette smoking.
Well, let me put some things in perspective, Don, and that is that our human bodies are chemical factories, very sensitive. And you take the element called arsenic. Now, arsenic, we all know, is a poison. But our bodies require at least a teaspoon of arsenic in here. Why? Because it's used as a catalyst in our bodies. And we have umpteen catalysts that it just goes on and on. We really don't know all the chemical equations in the body that go. So we're talking about what is known and unknown. There's probably a lot more unknown, but the few things that we do know are strange, and that's because we're inducing it into our body. So you named several chemicals there. Well, we can take some of that and absorb it, but some people are sensitive one way or the other, and we don't know where the standard is for the sensitivity, because some people can smoke and, let's say, smoke 10 years and all of a sudden say, no, I'm not doing it anymore, but then 5 years later they develop brain cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, is there a relationship with abnormality in the head due to the reason they were smoking? We don't know. Could there be? Yes, there's a question mark, but it's unknown. But do you want to take that gamble? Are you willing to gamble parts of your body or even your whole body on risking something that gives you temporary relief for the moment? Now, that temporary relief is not only affecting you in the air, but we know in the human body, if you start smoking increases the temperature in your mouth, and it starts dissipating other things that are going on in your mouth. But we do know it starts making you thirsty. So smoking and drinking go together. The more you smoke, the more dry you feel, the more you feel like you must take in more liquid. So now we got to worry about what liquid you're ingesting. If it's alcohol, now you got a double addiction that you're building up. So we do know that there's relationships here as it relates to the external influence on our bodies. But again, this comes back as a question mark. And if you want to keep gambling to find out, it may take you a lifetime because you may be insensitive to this. But other people will feel it right away. So we don't know where the level or the standard is of bad and good because we can't always tell what's going on inside your body. So by using tobacco, you're introducing a question mark into the health of your body. Do you want to gamble and let a doctor tell you how much damage you've done after 10, 20, 30 years of smoking has happened? Why go through that pain and suffering? If you really want to know what's good for you, you will read about it, do a little research, and understand that the unknowns are very fearful. Now, they may be out of alignment with things, but most people don't want to hear that a government is telling me what to do. Well, the government is looking at a pattern that's happened over a period of time. The government doesn't know you, your Social Security number, and exactly what smoke is doing to your body. But the pattern looks at the population over a period of time, and it says there's an imbalance here. There's something wrong. We're looking at the effect, but we're not too sure about the cause. But that's okay. If you think that you'll fit into the pattern and you don't have to worry about it, then light up another cigarette and you'll find out in the long run what it's costing you.
Thank you, Dennis. Now, they're basically, believe it or not, Dennis, we only have about 9 minutes left. We'll spill over a little bit. We can't even make this whole presentation. I think perhaps next month, after all the holidays that we have, I'd like to make a part two because there's just so much information. I feel that if we don't share this, we'd be doing a little bit of a disservice. And I want to make a caveat, but so that I am not an expert in the field of helping individuals. I've been doing it for about 6 years now, and I have to admit that my rate of success has not been so great. But taking this course once again kind of supercharges me to reinvigorate my efforts to try to help those who I work with. Basically, although I mentioned there's only about 5 out of 62 individuals in our program who, in the agency I work for, who smoke, actually 3 out of my own caseload of 19 actually do smoke. So I hope to help the people that I work with to get better outcomes than the fact that they're still smoking every day. We're going to end off on this, Dennis, and bless your souls out there, the idea of harm reduction. The concept of harm reduction, which in itself is a little bit controversial, because after the teaching that I share with my peers the next day after that training I took with the Center for Urban Community Services, one of the individuals who heard me speak on this past Thursday himself was a former smoker of 20 years who quit cold turkey on the spot. Now, we didn't talk about what happened, because we'll talk about hopefully the next program. There are a lot of side effects that can take place. Even when a person stops smoking, it makes it hard to quit. So he said that the best way of reducing the harm of smoking is to go cold turkey. But we're not going in that direction right now. That's a discussion for another time. I really have to learn more about that. And I'll see if I can have more information to share, if there's any statistical evidence about the percentage. Well, actually, James Kennedy mentioned that when people make that courageous stance to quit smoking, from studies done, only 8% are able to maintain their smoking cessation. Well, 92% return to the smoking. So we're dealing with a type of addiction, blessed souls, that we have to be there for those who are willing to have the courage and are brave enough to quit, to empathize with them and tell them, well, that I've learned that only 8% of people who stop smoking can actually maintain a lifestyle without the tobacco and the addictive nicotine that's embedded within the tobacco. So that's number one. But the harm reduction is working with individuals who are actively smoking and we may have no desire to stop. And as I just mentioned, abstinence or going cold turkey is ideal, but accepts alternatives that reduce harm. And it offers low-demand services. One of the things that James brought out as well, that, thank God that the 7 options for harm reduction, meaning moving away in the direction of moving away from smoking more cigarettes or trying to go cold turkey with these now seven lines of medications. These medications are covered by Medicare, and I'm assuming as well by most, if not all, insurance plans. So in brief, I just want to share with you these seven first-line medications. Number one is nicotine gum. Number two is nicotine inhaler. Number three, nicotine lozenge, which is held in the mouth, not chewed on, but the nicotine is released slowly. The nicotine nasal spray, it delivers nicotine rapidly to the bloodstream. Then there's the nicotine patch, which has a measured dose, which seeps into the skin. And then there is Wellbutrin, bupropion SR, which I think is the generic term. And then Wellbutrin XR, which is extended release, which is used for prescription for both major depression and tobacco dependence. There's also Shantax, which treats tobacco dependence. And then the next option is the combination. So it's kind of like it's seven with an asterisk for an eighth, combining all the medications above, not all at one time, but to combine the medications, but it has to be strictly under medical supervision. But there are side effects to all these medications, in particular, especially the Shantix, which can be extremely dangerous for someone who has some sort of renal compromised situations with their kidneys. So then there's just so much more to talk about, but I think that at least we've drawn in our listening audience into the conversation. And again, we should walk away, I think, Dennis, with this idea, as the Rambam talks about, that this idea of coming closer to Hashem, to God, in our service as human beings and as stewards of the earth and as those who wish good for others, as good-hearted people are inclined to do. In Chapter 5 in the Laws of Repentance, the Laws of Tshuva, Rambam writes, "Free will is granted to all human beings, to all men. If one desires to turn himself to the path of good and righteousness, his choice is his, or it's her choice as well. And should he turn to the path of evil and wicked, the choice is his. As it says in the book of Genesis, chapter 3, verse 22, behold, man, which includes woman, has become unique as ourselves, knowing good and evil. The human species became singular in the world with no other species resembling in the following quality. That man, meaning human being, man or woman, can, on his or her own initiative, with his or her knowledge and thought, know good and evil and do what he or she desires. There is no one who can prevent him or her from doing good or bad. Accordingly, there was a need to drive him out from the Garden of Eden, quote-unquote, lest he stretch out his hand and take from the tree of life." So, Dennis, what we want to encourage walking away from this quoting from the Rambam is, this is basically our last presentation before the new year, the lunar calendar year of 5778, which Lubavitcher was very sharp to point out, is something which we humbly suggest to the entire human family experience. Everything is going to be passing through the microscope of Creator's heavenly judgments in the next couple of days, not only human beings, but all forms of animal matter, all forms of vegetative matter, all forms of mineral matter. But the main thing we should know, as the center of Creator's plan, as human beings, the stewards of this earth, which you mentioned early in the program, so we have the power to make the right choice. But as we mentioned before, in terms of this addiction, this insidious addiction of nicotine or smoking or chewing tobacco or snuff, that the more we learn about it, the more it should behoove us to want to make those courageous, brave steps to break this addiction and serve as living examples for other people, not to not only stop it, but to educate others. And I feel, as someone, as one teeny tiny one out of 7 billion human beings, this is my little microcosmic effort to share some awareness that being an activist for Torah means we have to care about human beings, just basic baseline health, and how they should be able to upgrade their health, hopefully in a peaceful and pleasant manner. So I'll leave you the last word, Dennis, before we segue out of today's program.
Yes, I was a smoker for 25 years, but I didn't smoke cigarettes because I thought they tasted ugly. I was a cigar smoker for 25 years, and then I gave it up cold, and that was 25 years ago. And I get x-ray of the lungs, and it's clear, white, no problem. But let me just amend that thing that I, that little tune that I've been repeating during this conversation, Don. It's know thyself. I'd like to add to that. Know thyself, but take control of your mind and your body.
Thank you, Dennis. And I want to wish you and your entire family and your community of friends to be written and sealed for the sweetest year ever. As we say, the year 5778 is not going to be mediocre. It's going to be great.
Have a happy new year.
Thank you. So, blessed us, we're going to segue out, as we have been prone to in the past, especially when I did programs with Dennis, to segue out with Help Me Find My Way Home. Not just this, other various songs, but by the same artist, David Dome. Help us to get back home, to understand and internalize and to realize our Tzelem Elohim is no dream. Our divine image will help us get off in scrimmage, not in the game of life, but in the wonderful, blessed, merciful experience of life, which would be devoid of war and strife. And as your local international cyberspace Torah activist, your local international Nudnik Gudnik, I have to remind everyone and myself before anyone else, I've got to be good, you've got to be good, we've all got to be good, because it's teva tov lehetiv, it's the nature of the good to do good, and the Creator, who's the source of all goodness, put us on this earth. So therefore empowered, because we're coming from the source of all goodness, to do some good. So do some good, as you know you should. We're segueing out of today's program with Help Me Find My Way Home by David Dome. Peace, shalom, everyone. And let's look forward to hearing some really good news for all the 7 billion plus members of this wonderful human family experience. Take care, everyone.
Help me find my way home.